GM. Welcome to the Boonified Experience Podcast. I am your host, Kyle, but really, most people, they just call me Boona. This is a Web3 podcast that documents the stories of artists, collectors, and true visionaries pushing the boundaries of technology to create a brighter future for all. If you're new here and are returning and haven't done so, go ahead and do the thing and follow and or subscribe to this podcast, whichever platform you're on. Doing so helps boost this podcast, grows it, and which provides a more safe and authentic on-ramp for people looking to hop into Web3 and explore what talents they can bring to the space. Now, if you're wanting even more access, you have a Patreon channel, which does give you early access to episodes, specifically 5 days early, and also get you a custom role in my personal Discord, which gives you more access to myself, as well as other fellow Patreon members. So, keyword access, if you want a little bit more of that, I do have a link in the description below, as well as on my website under the membership tab. Now, let's get to today's guest. I had the pleasure of chatting with Joe Cardamone. Joe, anyone who's in the Web3 space probably knows Joe by his most iconic profile picture of himself, which is honestly one of the most iconic self-portraits I think I've ever seen ever. And I have no problem admitting that. I shared that to him in a DM before when we were making the thumbnail for this video, for this podcast. So, Joe is one of my favorite people. Every time I hear him in a Twitter space, he's always trying to be on the ground floor, helping people with his life experience. And, you know, enough times of hearing this, I was like, you know what, we need to have him on. I need to hear this guy's story and need to know a little bit more about the man behind the beautiful profile picture here. So Joe's a photographer, has a wide variety of styles, everything from power plants to clowns to monuments, so much more. He's a very fascinating storyteller, and we got to dive into a little bit of what makes him tick. We go through, you know, the subtle art of not giving a fuck, and when he found that moment and when he flipped that switch in his personal career. Something that really stuck out to me also is Joe's advice on how to better ask our brains questions, which is something that I'm not good at, which is something that I ask my brain a lot of bad questions, so therefore get a lot of bad answers. And it really got me thinking about how I can apply this to my life moving forward. The rest of the time we spend our time talking about two important topics, one of which was painful art versus joyful art and why we tend to gravitate more towards painful art, but also making a bull case for why joyful art should also be just as accepted. And lastly, we dive into his foundation genesis piece, ADHD and Me. Y'all, you're going to get a lot from this episode. I know I did. Let's go ahead and get started with the show. GM, Joe, how are you, man?
I'm doing well, man. GM in a non-NFT space still feels weird when I say it.
It does. I say here, it probably is most, like, I'm more comfortable saying it here because obviously we both play in the same arena.
Right.
But saying it in public still sounds really weird. I will say though, without preaching the gospel of NFTs to people at work. You know, I'll do that separately with people who are curious, but I've just started doing GM in all of our, in our team channel, and like two people are just doing it automatically. They have no clue.
Yo, Pavlovian onboarding for the
NFT. They have no clue what they're doing. The reality is that I'm just being a good steward and making sure that they understand the culture before the culture like is enforced upon people, right? Before the culture just becomes mainstream, right?
Yeah. No, that's a good way of looking at it. Then they get in, they're like, oh yeah, of course, GM, yeah. We've been doing this for years.
That's right. And when they do it, it's not gonna feel strange. Where people have to learn, they get to, because it's just in text, it's easier to chat. It's easier to do it, and if for some reason there's a feeling and an attachment to it that I can't really describe, because I think that's what first like made me fall in love with this space, was like everyone was just telling each other good morning, and I'm just like, the fuck, man, what's wrong with you people, right? Like I didn't understand. I was trying to overanalyze it, overthink it, and like, what's the angle? It's like, nah, man.
Dude, you are not alone. It eventually got me too, because I was the same way, right? Like I was like, this is weird. Because the other thing you get is you get in the infinite loop GM cycle of like right. somebody said yeah. like, well, post GM, then you post GM, then they post GM back. But like, right. what's the protocol? How many GMs are the GM? So like when I first saw that, I was like, this is just weird. But then it gets like weirdly fun, right? Like it gets like, yeah. you'll see a GM and be like, oh, hey, GM. Like you get this like little dopamine burst where you're like, oh, I'm GMing yes. my friends here. And yeah, it sucked me in pretty quick.
It did, man. You're right. And there's a, I'll tell you, sometimes like the protocol for me, it changes, you know, because there's times where I do it like before I do my morning routine. And then I try to not log onto Twitter before I do that. Cause like, it's like, I have a routine. It sets the tone for the day. It's like, it helps me like, you know, plan out my day and like get level headed. Cause my brain doesn't start functioning. Even if I'm up at 6, my brain doesn't start functioning till like 9:30, maybe like 10 o'clock is where I'm probably the best, or when it really starts going. So I really try to do it before then. So the cycle before you'll notice a difference. If I do it before my morning routine, like it's just a like. Like if I do it afterwards, it's usually a response.
Like, good to know.
Yeah. Some days I just can't help it though. Some days I'm like, you know, whether I'm like super excited to wake up and check Twitter or I'm like in my feelings and wake up to like distract myself on Twitter, you know, like that's kind of the either or. It's the same thing, man. But it also, Joe, it took me a while to understand that like it didn't really matter what time of day it was.
Yeah.
Like, that was, you know, and to once it clicked though, it started to click though, because this is a, I haven't really said this in a while, but like I've said it a lot before, like in, like with my friend circle, is that this is the one thing, like the one of the reasons why crypto as a whole, but also NFT and art, like has accelerated so fast, or why innovation is happening so fast here, is because this is one thing that universally as the world, we can all agree upon. And so therefore this is a 24-hour-a-day industry. Right. Like it moves so fast because yeah. people are so energized to create and do something, because the canvas is blank. It's one thing that we all agree on. Now, there's not many things that all of the countries ever agree on. Right. There's not really many things that we all 100% could say, like, you know what, we're for this. This is one of them, you know. And so that's when it hit me that it was like, this is just a global group of kind of like rough riders, like figuring out something brand new.
Yeah.
This was like, it hit me and it became so much more impactful. And like, I in the beginning, I kind of just faked it because I just didn't understand. But after about a month, I was like, oh, cool, man. Like this, it became really genuine, and it became something I like really looked forward to doing every single day.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. No, I think I'm in the same boat. Like that's exactly, that was exactly my process coming into it too. Right. Is, yeah. you know, I remember when it did suck me in, I remember reading a tweet. Somebody said, well, it's nighttime for me. And my immediate thought, I don't respond to that stuff. I just like, oh yeah, that's, you know, right. people have their opinions. Right. But my immediate thought was like, no, it just means like, hey, like it's GM is not, I mean, it means good morning, but it's not really like top of the morning to you. Right. It's not like that. It's more just like, hey, how's it going? Good to see you. Like it's all those different things wrapped into
it's everything.
Into one. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, man. And it's a great gesture. It feels really good to say it, you know? So, now speaking of your journey, like, you know, let's do, like Joe, when did you come into this space? Like, how long have you been here? Like, tell us, you know, just for the podcast, you know, cause we know each other decently, but let's let other people an opportunity to know you.
Yeah. So I always got a shout out, Rough Draft, Brandon. So, he was somebody I followed and connected with on Instagram a while ago. Mm. And he is so intelligent and does so much research. And when I saw Brandon talking about NFTs on Instagram, and I think on Twitter, cause I was following him on Twitter as well. My Twitter was still the before Twitter. But when it was before the Twitter, you know, I would see him talking about NFTs and I was like, oh shit. Okay. Brandon's talking about this. I'm going to look into this because like he's not involved in stuff that he hasn't looked into. So
right.
I was like, all right, cool. Let me check this out. And then the more I looked at it and, you know, did my own research, I realized it was pretty cool. Like it allowed a lot of opportunity for artists that wasn't available in the real world. So like I jumped into the NFT space on Twitter. I wasn't there in Clubhouse. But I got in on Twitter Spaces in, let's say, November of 2021. And I mostly just lurked for a while. I mostly lurked for like a good month or so, just listening and learning and soaking up as much as I could. And then end of December, beginning of January, I started speaking Spaces. Like, I wanted to get up because I noticed there was a lot of, you know, I, at first I was like, well, I don't know anything about this. I'm not going to go up and speak on crypto or NFTs. Because I don't know anything about it. But then, I realized there was a lot of like life or foundational information or experiential information that I could talk to, and I was like, oh, okay, like I can add value from just my life experiences or things I've learned along the way that isn't specific to NFTs, but might be specific for this scenario, this person, or this, you know,
right. Universal truths and experiences doesn't really matter what industry you're in. They're going to apply.
Yeah. I don't know why I thought it would be any different there, but for some reason, because it was also Twitter Spaces were new for me. Right. So like I just, you know, seeing the stage, and I don't mind speaking in front of people, but it was kind of like, I viewed them at first of like little tribes almost of like, oh, this is like, I thought the host would like had almost like they were like meetings people set up. And like they knew, like they just offered panel spots to the people they knew, which is kind of the case, but not the way I was thinking of it.
Yeah. You're thinking of it more corporate like.
Yeah, exactly. So then it's a very long way to say that I started hopping on in Twitter Spaces in like early January. And the only like actual calculated move I've made in this space was I didn't mint anything until after January 1st because of taxes. I knew that taxes were going to be a thing. And I knew if I at least waited to January, I would be able to go through this tax cycle with everybody in the space learning shit and me going, all right, what stuff that I know to do and when not to do. So I didn't mint anything till the beginning of January. And then I've just been rolling ever since.
That's really smart. You know, because that was going to be one of my questions was how long was the LARPing phase? How long did you, you know, just kind of like hang out before you participated? Because there's a period of time. For me, it was like 3 to 4 months where it was like, I was so self-conscious, like, because very similar to you. I'm like, I have no business giving anyone advice here. Like especially not money, especially not in, you know, crypto, especially not in technology, especially not in art. I'm like, I love technology, but I didn't know enough about it to like bring something valuable to someone. Like I'm just a fanboy of technology. I've always loved technology. But I felt like that in the beginning, and I never knew like what my spot was. Cause I'm just like, I have no I feel like I had genuinely no value to offer. And it was really tough. But I'll tell you, in the beginning, for me, it was, I came in kind of at the tail end of maybe like right in the middle of the Clubhouse era, where it was like, it was around March of 2021. And, I remember the first time I think I spent about a month before I finally had the courage to even to request to come on stage. And a little bit of, I think you probably know this, just a little bit about what we talked about, is that like I was podcasting in esports before I came into the space. Right. So I was, you know, it's not like I wasn't doing something already, but the only way I found courage to speak was because it was a gaming and Web3 room. And it was barely anyone in there. There was maybe like 8 or 9 people in there. And it was like, I'm like, okay, cool. I feel like I can like muster the courage to like ask a question here, because I don't, you know, even if it is a dumb question, okay, only 8 people are going to hear it. Right. but I don't know if this experience is like this for you, but I thought, even in spending a lot of time in these rooms, I genuinely thought that like I was going to be crucified on stage if I came up and asked a question. Like I felt like I was going to be crucified by that. Did you have that experience?
So, all right. So it's a kind of, but so I'm missing the switch or gene that makes me care what other people think about me, which is great. Got some downsides every now and then.
Sure.
But like, I wasn't worried about looking foolish. I was more worried about, not even worried. Like, I was just like, I've got nothing to, why would I go up there? Why would I spend my time? Because they're going to ask me about what's it mean when it's on. Like, I thought they're going to ask me like crypto stuff. And I was like, dude, I got nothing to tell them about crypto stuff. Like, I'm not going to go up there and they're going to ask me some ridiculous question. I'm just going to tell them I have no idea what you're talking about. And then so it's just going to be a waste of my time, waste of their time. I'm not doing it. So it was less worrying about my perception in people's eyes and more like, I've got nothing to offer. Why would I do that?
Question about that, and this is going to go beyond crypto, was there ever a point, or number one, was there ever a point where you did give a lot of shits about what people thought about you? And if so, what was like that switch where you just like, you know what, I don't care about this anymore?
I am human, so yes. I still enjoy validation and stuff when people say like, oh, I really love 100%. Your photo. I'm like, oh, that's awesome, right? Yeah. But for me, it was before I found photography, right? Before I found acting, because I do acting as well. So before I found the two things that
I didn't know about that.
Oh, snap. Okay. All right.
I didn't know about that.
Oh boy. Before I found the two things that I really love and connected with, you know, I was kind of just wading through the water of life, right? Like not really having any direction. So when you're doing that, when I was doing that, I kind of didn't know, because I was directionless, everybody that said something meant something to me because I didn't have an anchor, right?
Yes.
Like
yes.
I didn't have an anchor. So I was just blowing in the wind with other people's ideas. But then when I got deployed, and I realized I could go to sleep and not wake up in the morning, it was like a light switch that went off. I just stopped care. Like my perspective shifted so drastically that I just stopped wasting my time caring about those things. Like it wasn't even like a conscious, I'm going to stop wasting my time. It was just like, what are you doing? Who cares? Yeah, I just stopped. Like I was just like, this, you've gone through this. It's hit you so deeply and differently than anything else in your life. Why is some stranger saying something about, I don't know, like the way you delivered a line or your photo? Why is that?
Yeah.
That's going to break you at this point in your life? No, it's not. Right. So who cares? Like, after that, I just went full force into just being me. And, you know, and that's not, you know, that's not the same to me as like criticism or feedback or growth or learning, but perception and caring of people's perception of me. I honestly just literally never think about, I never think about it.
I love that, dude. And I'll be honest, like I still fall into traps where like, it's like, I'm just starting to finally crawl out of that hole. You know what I mean? That's because, and I asked that number one, just out of genuine curiosity, because like typically when things change, it happens without effort. That's been one thing that like I've noticed, is that like something will just hit me so strong. Yeah. It'll impact me in a way that nothing else ever has. And that's what changes my perspective. It happened when I quit smoking cigarettes. It happened when I, you know, quit, you know, like it happened like when I got sober. There was this moment where, you know, now I still fought and tugged and like, you know, just, you know, sometimes my feet drug along the way, but like there, it's like those moments where it just becomes so fucking clear.
Yeah.
Like there's no, like, cause the mind, you know, it's like our intuition always, or my intuition always knows that like what the right answer is, but there's this really like just toxic. I don't know if it's toxic, but I just think immature part of our brains that is so strong, and it won't let the right answer come to light. It won't, it happens, like it comes to the mind so much, but it's like a very small voice, and over time that grows. So I say that to say, every time that like I've grown, there's so much time up to that point where I'm just like, I'm trying to do it. And it's like, no, dude, just fucking be yourself up until the point where this belief or this fear or this whatever it is doesn't serve you anymore. And that's been typically it. So I love hearing people's experiences around that, because like the growth is not, so you don't have to try to grow.
Like, yeah, no, that's, I really like how you said that. You don't have to try to grow. And also going back to like, you know, your immature brain, like our brains are smart. Our brains will always answer questions we ask it. It will always give you an answer to a question you ask it. The problem is more often than not, we ask it bad questions, right?
Yeah.
So if we ask it, am I not good enough? Your brain's going to go, I don't know, maybe you're not. Maybe if you did this, you'd probably be better, right? Like But if you say, but if you give it different questions, or, you know, can I grow more? Can I learn more? Your brain be like, yeah, of course. You'd be like, all right, cool. You're not asking it the negative connotation of the same answer you're trying to get. So anytime you ask your brain a question, you're going to get the answer. So if you're asking it negative questions, you're going to get those negative responses every time. So it's hard. Like this whole conversation is something that I actually struggle with, because I always feel kind of like a dick in spaces when people ask me this question, because there's, you know, in the space, and I mean, I know we're talking about NFTs, but like just in general to life, like people talk about, especially creative, imposter syndrome. I don't deal with that. I just don't. Yep. And I'm not trying to say that to be cool or like prideful, but like it's hard because I can't transfer my perspective to other people. I can only try to explain how it works for me, but I actually struggle with talking about it because I don't want the other people to feel minimized, because it's valid. Like their thoughts are valid, because I also did deal with it previously. It's not like I went through my whole life as like this un-Teflon person that like never struggled with any type of insecurity. No, of course not. But you know, in this space, in this art form, I don't struggle with that. So it's honestly, for me, it just comes down, all of this just comes down to perspective. Like you said, when something hits you, you just grow. And there's really no teaching that. It has to happen for each person contextually at some point in their life.
It does. And you know, what's really interesting, something on topics that I struggle with, like how to communicate it and to where it doesn't make the other person feel small, or not small, but like where it's, they don't feel validated, or they don't feel like I'm hearing them. Because like for me, it's like getting sober at 21. Like my life was a train wreck up until that point. Like nothing to show for myself. Nothing. I'd never accomplished anything. I just burned things to the ground. That's all I did, you know? And they're like, you know, sometimes like you have this great perspective. You have this, you're so young. You have all these life experiences. Like, how do you do that? I'm just like, I can't go tell someone, you know what? Go fucking get high on heroin and like see if you make it out. Right. Like I can't in good faith say something like that. I said the only reason it may not be the only reason, like, but the one of the largest reasons why I have the perspective I do is because I was forced to grow up really fast, and I had some experiences that I shouldn't have made it out of, you know? Yeah. And when you're like, when you're forced to like grow up like that, when you know the only other option is death, it makes things really simple. Right. Yeah. And like, but you can't go tell someone, you know what, go have some near death experiences and just try it out.
Right.
Like, you know, I would have a lawsuit coming to my door. Like I, you know, and on top of that, I couldn't live with myself. Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? So, but I'll say this, that's something I struggle with a lot of like communicating that, but the one on like how to get perspective, because obviously my way is my way, and there's more than one way to get perspective. But there was I had Sean Mundy on, and it was really interesting to hear his perspective on his art style, because his art has a lot of darker connotations to it. And it has a lot of like medieval, and it has a lot of like just like kind of like grim, you know, like internal, like it looks like damn, like what's the inside of that man's mind? Yeah. But he's like, I honestly put out the opposite of what's in me. Like I've never, like my life has been great. I've had a great upbringing. I've had great life experiences. I've created everything. And like, I honestly just do this to explore another world. And like, that was super interesting to me. It's like, okay, so greatness doesn't always have to come from a really monumental struggle. You know what I mean?
So happy you said that. Like there are two big myths. Sorry. I don't know if you were continuing.
Go for it.
The starving artist myth and the not struggling artist. Oh God, my brain's going to not give me words, but the the suffering artist, right? So the struggling artist and the suffering artist. For me, it's the artist in tune with themselves, regardless of what that looks like, because then you get authentic art. You can make great art if you're happy. You can make great art if you're sad. You can make great art if you're successful, whatever that looks like to you. You can make great art if you're suffering. The thing that ties it all together for me is the artist who's doing that is connected with themselves, like Sean, right? Like he's connected with himself to understand his life and his life experiences, but also how he wants to portray his art. Like he's not faking either one of them. It's purposeful and there's intent, right? Because he's connected with himself. And for me, that's the conversation that I don't hear enough of, because most of the stuff that we get from artists who are suffering is because suffering, art is usually a form of therapy or a way to express. And most people who are connected with suffering, it's their outlet, right? So they are connected with that, and this is helping get it out. You see less of the joyful because it doesn't hit. Sometimes people don't respect it as much, right?
Yeah.
They're like, oh, this person, I mean, look at, even just take acting, right? We look at the quote unquote method actors, right? The people that, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis, oh, he lived in like a tent for 6 years and didn't wear shoes or whatever. And we're like, wow, he really suffered for his art. You don't need, you got great actors who just go in, turn it off as soon as the camera's off because they're connected with themselves and understand their intent. And I think that's, for me, that's more of the important conversation is, are you connected with yourself?
Yeah. I agree with you. And the one thing that now that we're talking about this, I like, cause I'm of the mindset, and I'll tell you, this conversation comes at a perfect time because I'm at this point where the past like 5 years, you know, there's been a lot of growth for me. There's been a lot of like really, really, really tough lessons that have taken me a long time to learn. And I'm finally coming to that point where with some of them, they're not serving, talking about where they're not serving me anymore. And so I'm like, what does it mean to continue to create without that pressure of finances, without that pressure of the imposter syndrome? Like when you take, it's like, okay, when you take that away, there's this void of like, what the fuck is there? You know, cause that has been my greatest motivator. Not the only motivator, but a really large one, because suffering does build character and you got to learn some of your own lessons. But I'm understanding that, at least what I'm coming to, is that this is a mindset shift of like, okay, now that these are not serving me anymore, now it's a conscious choice to whether I want to do that or not. Do I want to continue to do that or do I not? You know, there's a certain point where it doesn't become a choice, where it's not a choice because you're just not aware of it, or I'm just not aware of it. But once I finally wake up to it, it's like, okay, then if I do it moving forward, that's completely on me. That is a conscious choice and a complete mindset choice to struggle to do something. And will it serve me in certain situations? Probably, but most of the time it probably won't moving forward. There's a great saying that someone told me when I first got sober. It's like, once you know it, you can't unknow it. Yeah. And that fucked me up for a long, God damn it, man. It almost forced me into like being willfully ignorant at certain periods in my life. Cause I'm like, oh, I'm just no, not going to learn it. It's wonderful, man. So it's really interesting because I also look at some of the documentaries and I watched, for some reason I have this thing. I don't know. It's weird. Like I'm watching the Warhol Diaries on Netflix. Watched all 5 episodes, haven't watched the 6th one. Like, and it's been like a month. And I haven't watched it. I don't know why. I just haven't done it. Part of me knows, like, I think I know it's going to be really sad. And so I'm just like not.
It won't be sad if I don't watch it.
Right. It won't be sad if I don't watch it. Yeah. But one thing that like I notice is that it's interesting because there's, you know, we talk about the mindset of like, you know, you don't have to, the narrative is what you choose to believe. And the narrative is like completely a choice. You know, after a certain period, it's a choice. But you also look at great artists like Warhol and Basquiat, you know, and I'm just naming that because that's who I watched. A lot of them struggled their entire life and they still made just the most insane art, you know, and some of them lived to be a little older than others. You know, Basquiat died from a heroin overdose, right? Like it's really interesting to watch and see, you know, the artists that like truly make it like for the long term. You know, I'm curious to know if like that's what they believe, because there's some artists I look at, they've been creating for a long time, but they still have that mindset, right? And I'm just like, damn, are they choosing to do that? Like, what is preventing them from just like being happy? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think to the ones you mentioned, right? Like there, it's not to discount great art that comes from suffering, right? I just think it can come from both places. I just think we see more of the suffering, right? That's what I'm saying. Is like,
got it. Okay.
Like,
okay.
Basquiat and Warhol and the people who suffered their whole life, they may have actually suffered, right? The same way that until you got your perspective when you woke up and you were like, oh, no, this is different now. They may never have had that. So they may not have been able to, like, just, you know, change their perspective because they may never have had that moment. But because they used their art as a relief valve for the pressure that they felt, they were connected to it. And because they were connected to it, it's authentic art, which makes great art. Like, the thing that makes great art is authenticity, right? And that's what I was saying is you can be authentic in joy. You can be authentic in suffering. You can be authentic in all these different things. We just tend to see more of the suffering because it's easy. Like you said, it's automatic when it has to be a relief valve. Because if you let the pressure build too much, you just implode and then there's nothing that exists, right? But if you if it's automatic relief valve, you're putting something out because you just have to. There's nothing else you can do.
Yeah.
But you have to kind of train yourself that joy can be that too. If you don't already have that mindset, right? Because some people make great art from joy, right? Like, you can think of like Mr. Rogers or somebody, right? Like, we got so many great things from him and he was, you know, fairly happy, right? Like, as a human being, like, we all struggle with different things, but you know what I mean?
Right.
So, Bob Ross or whatever, well, he was kind of, but anyway, but you know what I mean? Like, you can make great things. You just have to be authentic to yourself.
Yeah.
And,
I like that point though. I like the point that, like, it's not a this or that. It's like a, you can create from both, you know? And that's good, man. I hadn't heard it put like that before. Cause it's, I noticed this, like, a lot of the art that I've collected has been a lot of, like, especially over the past like year, has been like super melancholic, you know, and just because of the journey that I've been on, and that's what speaks to me the most. So it's easier. I like that. It's easier to struggle just because it just feels automatic. But, and cause I've noticed this in life that, like, being happy takes work. It takes a lot of work, and that's like the fucked up paradox of being a human being, right? It's just like, well, to be happy.
Like, the melancholic part too, like, that's interesting to me because in my mind, like, melancholy, especially like dark art, right? We as humans, or I'll speak for myself instead of generalizing, but look for hope, right?
Yeah.
But I think when hope is just given to us, it feels cheaper. So when you're looking at melancholy or dark art, you're wishing for hope, even though it may not be present specifically in the art, you've got to work for it because it's making you feel a certain way. And you kind of want to feel that because when you feel that, your brain goes, but this isn't like, but there's something else, right? Then that something else is hope, right? So because you have all these layers that you get to think through, hope becomes that one you strive for. But when it's given to you, it feels a little cheaper. Like, well, I don't have to work for this hope. I'm just given hope now. Like, I just, okay, I'm fine. I'm happy and hopeful now. Cool. Like, what do I got to do?
You're right. Yeah. Yeah. You're exactly right. Every purchase, every transaction, like, it tells a story. Like, whatever you're purchasing, it tells a story. And I find that very fascinating because, you know, hope feels a lot cheaper, but it was very simple when I'm going back to, like, I'm going to beat the story into the ground, but it's okay. Cause it's mine. But it's like when I had to become utterly hopeless to understand that there was hope.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like, cause like, it's this one thing that we strive for, but it feels cheap. It's this weird paradox. And sometimes some people ask me, you know, even though I struggle greatly and there's a lot of things I do struggle with, like how sometimes I'm happy or how I see this perspective is that, like, one thing that actually started my journey in doing, like, one of the reasons it started, like, why we're sitting here today is that I subscribe to the belief that if life can get as bad as I experienced, it can also be that good. Mm-hmm. Like it can also be there's a yin and a yang to everything. Like if it can get that bad, then there is like all this other shit that I don't really know is possible. It can get really, really, really good. And so I think for me, drilling down into that state, like that hopelessness drilled into me, that statement of hope that like, okay, cool. You went this far down the rabbit hole, not the kind that you and me enjoy, you know, like in crypto and NFTs, but you know, that means the canvas is blank. That means the possibilities are actually endless. Cause like most people shouldn't have to live a life that gets that bad. Unfortunately it happens. But again, going back to like, I can't go recommend that to people. I can't go recommend that to people, man. And so sometimes I really, really struggle with like how to give people like solid things to, for them to apply to their life, you know, cause for me, the story was just really brutal. Like, and that's a really unfortunate thing. So
yeah, no, that's you definitely can't recommend that. One thing I try to recommend, it's mostly when people say they have creative blocks. I think it translates into perspective on struggle is like, I'm great at photography, right? And if I'm let's say I got an idea for a project I want to do, and I just can't figure it out. And I'm just sitting there and I'm just like, okay, I tried this. This doesn't work. I go and try to do something that I'm just shit at, right? Like digital art is one of them, right? I'm still learning it. I try to learn it all the time and I get halfway through and I'm like, this is way not easier than I expected it to be. What it does for me is not only does it take my brain completely away from the things that I feel are automatic or that I excel in, but it makes me also appreciate how good I am at the other thing. And so if I do something that I struggle with or that's hard for me, and then I go back to the thing I was struggling, I'm like, oh my God, you know, I got it. This is so much, this is way easier. And so it then kind of tricks my brain a little bit to go like, oh no, okay. We were floundering a little bit here, but we're good now. We got the engine moving. We're all right. That to me always helps. Like people like, oh, you know, I've kind of run out of things to make photos of. And it's like, well, go outside and force yourself to look at stuff you normally wouldn't. And then like write about it maybe. Like do something that's in the same realm, but completely different from what you're normally doing. And then when you go back to what you normally do, you'd be like, oh, okay, this is cool. I got this.
Dude, I'm telling you, you and me, like, I think I've been doing that without realizing that I've been doing that. It's been one of those things that I find myself. So this is something that I've always wanted to get better at is writing. It's something that like, I'm not just obviously conversation I'm naturally good at. Like to me, it's the one thing that I enjoy and I'd like to say I'm really good at it. You know, but there is a part of me that like wants to explore creative writing. There is a part of me that wants to do that. And I'm like, okay, I tried doing like a weekly of like what I learned, you know, a daily, like what I learned in the NFT space in the beginning. I'm like, this just doesn't do it for me. That just doesn't, you know, so I gave up on it. But recently I'm like, you know what? There are probably a lot of artists that English isn't their first language. They can type it. And we have a lot of technology to translate that and make it make sense. But they may not be able to speak. And so there's probably a spotlight on artists that just like that I'd want to talk to and get to know that don't necessarily, that may feel really self-conscious about doing it live. So I'm like, you know what? Let me take a risk. I really fuck it. I'm not good at writing. So I'm like, you know what? Let me interview you. Let me send you some questions. You answer them and I create a story from it. Like I have no idea what I'm doing. You know, but I genuinely want to learn how to do that because like there's a period where like I hit with my podcast and we're like, okay, I feel like I'm about to grow. What's the next point? And I feel like I'm in that block where it's like, okay, I'm good at what I do, but how do I get better at what I do? You know? And so it's one of my things that like, I'm also doing that. Plus I'm in the Collective Strangers Discord, learning about photography, learning about, you know, like exposure triangles and rule of thirds and like all this shit that like, it just goes way over my head for the most part. But I'm doing things I intentionally suck at to almost like get it. And I didn't have the clarity I didn't know the reason why I was doing that, but it's just something I did because I'm like, you know what? Like, let me just go do something that challenges me. You know, let me just go do something that like is a lot of fun and I have no clue where it's going to go. But you know, you sit in the barbershop long enough to get a haircut, man. Like, I interview mostly photographers, right? Like,
Yeah. I've never heard that one. I love that analogy. It's so good. Like, that's so good.
Yeah, dude. So I'm just I feel like it's inevitable. Like, I feel like it's just inevitable that I am going to pick up a camera and go try to shoot something with it, because I would almost be either really dumb or willfully ignorant to like not at least give it a shot, because I get to talk to so many great people, right? That are way fucking smarter than me in this realm that I have no clue about, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And dude, you got in like a perfect spot for it too, because outside of being in this space, one thing that's really lacking in photography is a sharing of the skill and mentorship. And that's one thing I see done really well, actually, in the NFT space, is especially in Twitter spaces. Somebody comes up and be like, hey, how'd you do that effect? Or, hey, what kind of like film do you use when you're shooting midday or whatever? And people on stage are like, oh, use this, but careful when you do this, you know, you want to set your settings.
Right.
Like
right.
Just open about their craft, which is beautiful, because then people like yourself who are like enjoying the art and doing it and then being in Discord, you've got an opportunity to literally pick the brains of people's work that you're like, oh my God, I love this. And then now you know how to do it and you can just go do it and practice and find your groove, find your style, throw away the things that don't work. And then if you've got questions, you can just hit somebody up and be like, hey, how's this work? Instead of like being out there and going, well, hopefully there's a YouTube video on it about it somewhere. Maybe I can just figure it out.
Right. Dude. Yeah, that's exactly it. Cause I've also wondered, just to share about my journey, is that like, okay, I'm podcasting, but okay, what am I doing with this network? Right. Like this is a network building opportunity. I get to meet so many great people. It's like, okay, what the fuck am I doing with it? Like I try to give as much as I can, but it's an interesting thing that like, it's almost like I feel I'm still at that spot where I'm just getting comfortable asking, you know, like, you know what I mean? And, cause it's challenging. It's challenging. I'm like, well, I don't want to like, you know, reputation and this and that. And like, you know, and like, I don't want to be perceived as going back to perception. Right. So it's interesting that you say that. And it's like, I felt that, but it's never really fully come to fruition. You know what I mean? It hasn't like resonated, if that makes sense. So I want to switch gears a little bit here, man, because I think we'd either just met or it was right before or it was right after. I didn't know this shot was you until like a few weeks after I saw it, but I was in NFT NYC and I saw your shot ADHD of me at the Compstomp Gallery. And that one really stuck out to me. I know there's probably a big story to tell there, and I believe that's your genesis, correct me if I'm wrong. But I'd want to know a little bit more about that piece and like how, like what you're trying, like what story you're trying to tell in that, or where that came from.
Yeah, no, it's so it's my oldest on foundation. My genesis was actually an American flag one I minted on OpenSea in January. Gotcha. That was my first piece I ever minted. But this one's my oldest on foundation. And yeah, speaking of getting into the Twitter space, all right, so that photo, it was like a Sunday. It was almost like 1 a.m. and I was in a Twitter space. And it was one of my first Twitter spaces I was speaking in because I don't know if you know Film God Q and
I got to meet him.
And Cookie were hosting a space and they were talking about protests and life and art. And I photographed a few of those and I was like, oh, I can speak on life. I can talk life. Because it was more art and life centered than crypto centered or NFT centered. So I hopped up and, you know, just talking on stage, and it was really foggy outside. And I'm a photographer, and I was like, "Oh, fog! you can't go capture this. Even if I come home with nothing, I gotta try." Yeah. So I got my tripod, and I was like, "Oh, I'll do some long exposures. It'll be fun with like the lights we have out in the neighborhood." So I got my tripod and my camera, and I was up on stage in the Twitter space, talking and you know fumbling around with my stuff. And I had one of those like, not like near death out of body experiences, but like looking at myself like I was watching a movie. And I just remember like literally audibly going, what the fuck are you doing? Like, dude, you gotta get up in like 6 hours. It's, you know, it's, you're walking around the neighborhood with your camera getting fog pictures and you're talking in a Twitter space about art and whatnot, and you're doing all this at the same time. Like, what are you doing right now? Like, you should be in bed. Like, you should. Right. So, you know, I deal with, you know, I live with ADHD all the time. And it was one of those moments where I had been so hyper-focused on just like talking on the space and getting pictures that's all I was doing. Right. Like, I was just like, I didn't even think about the time or anything else in the future. And I wanted to capture that feeling for myself, because I deal with that quite often, is, you know, editing photos. Like, I'll look up and it'll be 3 a.m. and I'll be like, oh God, you know, what are you doing? So I set up my camera, did a slow shutter speed and a timer, and walked out in front. I knew I wanted it to look blurry and have some frenetic feel to it. You know, I wanted it to feel alone also, because that's how I feel in my mind sometimes when I have those revelations. I'm like, oh my God, this is making me feel blurry and distracted, and also alone, because we were talking about perspective before. You know, my partner doesn't have ADHD, so trying to sometimes step back and explain what's going on or not going on in my brain, you know, is very, very difficult, because it's, you know, it would be akin to somebody who's depressed and somebody who's not, and the person who's not saying, like, why don't you just be happy, and going to the person, like, why don't you just remember it? Right. And it's like, well, why don't you just think about the consequences of the future? And you're like, well, if I could, I would. I literally can't. So that's how that photo was born, is I wanted to capture that feeling of it. And, you know, it's been wild, because that photo, unsurprisingly, I feel like at this point, has connected with a lot of creative people in this space. Like, oh my God, this is me. Or, oh my God, this is exactly how I feel. Or, you encapsulated exactly what I went through when I was feeling this or whatever. And that's really cool to hear. And, you know, not alone kind of thing.
I like that. I like that, man. And you have something I noticed, like, with browsing your work, you like to do a lot of things. Like, I noticed you don't like to pin yourself to, like, one type of, you know, style here. So, like, does that have to do with ADHD, or is that just pure curiosity?
I honestly, pure curiosity. And I had a revelation again in a Q and cookie space. I'm going to just keep shouting them out, because that's a space that we just talk, right? And when you're able to just do that with friends or people you connect with, sometimes revelations happen, right? And one of those spaces was actually a couple months ago, is I didn't realize, because I grew up in a very religious household, and then I also joined the military, right? So I had a lot of forced structure in my life.
Yeah.
And one of the things I realized is, you know, I've always said, like, I shoot what I love, because I do. Like, any photo I make, there's a reason why I press. There may not be like a crazy story of, like, I hiked down this trail and I did all these different things, or I drove 8 miles. Like, there may not be a big story behind it, but there's always a reason behind it. And that reason may be how I felt, or how, like, this pertained to something in my life, whatever that is. There's always a reason why I made the picture. And I realized in that space when we were talking that I think the reason I shoot what I love, and my breadth of work, actually, as time goes on, the more broad my work gets, not the more narrow.
Interesting.
And I think the reason for that is because I don't like to set a box around myself. Like, I will go, if you look at it, I got a couple of skateboarding pictures out there. Those photos I made, my whole intent that day was, I'm going to take my camera and go to the skate park downtown. That was it. It wasn't, I'm going to make sure I capture this, or I want to get a cool trick, or I want to make sure I get shadows, or I want to get this. It was, I'm going to go make photos today. Let me go to the skate park. That's how I approach anything that's not like client work. To me, is a separate box, because usually that comes with, we need this and we need that, you know, like, that's different.
Yeah.
But anything for myself, that's basically my scenario. Like, today, after we, you know, like I said, I'm going to make photos today. I'm literally just going to drive around. I'm going to go to some cemeteries. I'm going to go to some, like, just country things. I got some texture stuff that I was like, oh, trees or whatever. That's it. And the cool thing for me that does is I don't feel any pressure, So anything that I come home with, it's what I wanted to make a photo of. I don't like, there's nothing. Yeah. Yeah. People say like, I'm lucky if I come home with one photo after I go out for 2 weeks. Today, I guarantee I will come home with at least five photos I'd be comfortable putting out on the timeline. And that happens every time I go make photos because it's what I want to make a photo of. I don't care if like I put it out and people are like, oh, I don't like that. It's like, cool, I do. I thought it was good. Now, don't get me wrong. Me as an artist, I will look at my own photos and be like, this isn't good or I don't like this based on my intent or my reason behind the photo, right? Like that's a different story.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I always come home with something because my intent is just to be open for opportunity. And I find the more I'm open for opportunity and I'm not putting guardrails around myself, there's an opportunity all the time because I'm going out to look for the opportunity. Yeah. So
I like that. That was the intent that I came into with the NFT space, was that I didn't come in here and say, I want to make money. I didn't come in here and say, I want to, obviously that's an element of it, but that wasn't like the chief motive. And the second thing was that like, or the thing I most came in here is that like, I don't know what I'm doing. So I want to try and figure that out. Like, I don't know what I'm talking about. So I want to, like, I think deep down, what I really wanted to do the most here was like, just to like, at least finally be able to speak intelligently on something I really enjoy. You know, and that was actually the primary motive for starting this podcast, like, or at least pivoting to the Web3 space is, you know, it was interesting though, because it was different in esports. In esports, I was trying to drive home the story that not everyone that plays video games is a basement dweller. And like, this is an actual like lucrative business. And I wanted to bring on people that were analysts, they were casters, they were, you know, content creators, they were production, they were this. There's so many people. And there's so many different skill sets that esports needed, but it's such a still undervalued industry that I'm just like, let's just paint this in a better picture. That was my whole goal with that. My whole goal with here was that like, I'm just like, I feel really small. So let me just reach out to people who are really fucking smart and like literally just ask questions like I'm a 3-year-old, you know, like that, that was my main goal because, and the unironic consequence of doing that was I'm not one of the NFT flippers. Like I do a little trading here and there, but like I buy things I like, you know? So like even the one sale that knocked out half my debt, that took me 3 months from the moment I first thought I wanted to sell, first had the idea to sell it, to me actually selling it. Yeah. Like it took me 3 months of like, no, I'm not going to do it. Like this could be a retirement vehicle. No, the way it was set up, I'm like, I believed in this so much. And so, but when I finally sold it, I'm like, you know what? If you never realize anything, all of this is fake Monopoly money, like everyone says it is, right? Like, then that is actually true. So I say that as a long-winded answer to your, or to a long-winded way to relate to your thing of like, my whole intent here was just to be open to learning.
Like,
pardon the meme and pardon the, you know, like we're just doing a little learning here. Like that was actually one of my main. That was one of my main intents, and that's, and something I'm like, well, is that still the primary motive? You know, and sometimes the answer is no, and sometimes the answer is yes. And so it's interesting to go back and like, as I grow and as I evolve, is that still true? Right.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's important though. Like I appreciate the fact that you kind of refresh, you know, your initial why, right? Like, That's one thing I in the space and creatives in general, and you know, tying back to the imposter syndrome, is there's a decent amount of folks who haven't figured out their why, right? Whatever that might look like.
Yeah.
And so what I usually try to say is like, actually write it down. Like,
dude, there is so much power in a digital age. There is so much power in just write, and not even writing it down on an iPad, like writing it down on paper.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
100%.
And not self. The other important part is not self editing. Literally vomit your brain onto the page of what is your why? And then like, in addition to that, what does success look like to you? What does success look like monetarily? What does it look like creatively? Mm-hmm. What does it look like personally? Right. And when you have all of those in the in-between spots of what success looks like and what your why is, that's where you can play and work and figure things out, because you've got your anchor points. You've got your things that, like, okay, this is my reason. But to your point, those things can change, and they should change. You should add to them. You should refresh them. You know, my why as a photographer probably won't change, but what does success look like to me may change. Yep. My why for being in the NFT space may change and probably will change, right?
Yeah.
But like, you need to know it, because the other thing is, you're going to get advice. You're going to get so many people throwing things at you, be like, oh, you should do this, you should do that. And like we were talking about earlier, when you're floating in the sea and you're rudderless and directionless, somebody's guidance is going to be a huge wave or wind that pushes you this whole way if you want to catch it and ride it, right?
That's right.
And if you don't have those anchor points to know, wait, do I want to catch this wave? Because it's sending me that way. Do I want to go that way? You're going to be lost, right? Yeah. So you need to have those anchors down to go like, all right, hold up. Let me look at this real quick. Yeah. Okay, cool. I will catch that wave. Let me ride it.
Right.
So
I remember that, dude. I thought about this when you're saying this in the beginning, but I didn't elaborate on it. It was when I was first entering in the workforce. I was maybe like 2 or 3 years in like my professional career. And it was like, I remember having this epiphany. There were so many people I respected. Like, I respected my mom's opinion. I respected, you know, my boss's opinion. I respected all these other people's. And like, I would try to find a way to ask the same question to all these different people. And I remember I got 3 different answers. And I'm like, what the fuck is the right answer then, man? Like, to your point, though, I had no anchor point. Like, I had no anchor point. I was kind of just like a fart in the wind. You know what I mean? Where I was just like, whatever someone told me, and if it felt right, I did it. And then that would bring me over here, and then I'd run into that guardrail, and I'd go back and forth. I think the biggest thing that I've learned is that, like, having some empathy for myself, that when I learn something new, I'm going to go really hard in one direction and just like full send. Like, that's my MO. It's how I've always done it. Like, and I think it's almost like, I'm only going to speak for myself, but that's, and then I'm going to realize that, like, fuck, maybe I shouldn't do that. Then I'm going to pull back, and I'm going to go really hard the other direction. Right. And then, but the only way, to me, the only way to find what it is that I want to do is by figuring out the boundaries or the limits or what on both sides, because the value's in the middle. Like, my truth and my answer, or the answer to my question, lies in the middle. And so there's no way for me to find that out, but just like going really fucking hard in one direction and then really hard in the other direction, because then I'll know the middle. Then I'll understand, okay, here's the extremes of both sides, but here's where I can play. Kind of to your point of like, you got to figure that out. Like, once you figure out those anchor points, then you can find, then it makes making decisions, dude, so much easier. Like decision making doesn't become so paralyzing, you know?
Yeah. It's like, all right, really quick, I'll show you this kind of in the same vein. So this is my podcasting mic I bought.
Yep.
When I decided I was going to do podcast and vlogs 2.5 years ago, it's never been hooked to my computer. And I keep it next to my computer now as a monument to reminding myself that just because I'm super excited about something doesn't mean that I'm actually passionate about it. Right. Mm. And that's taken me a lot of years. And I still struggle with it.
Yeah.
But it's taken me a lot of years to like separate the two. And so before, you know, and I still run head just because like you, I run head first and stuff. Like, I see something shiny or that hits me, I'm like, oh, let's go. So now I go like, let's go. And I'll get off the starting block and I'll go, hold up.
Yeah.
Like, all right. Just if I know it's not going to hurt me financially or mentally, I'll just run. Like, I don't care. It's always easy for me to pull back for stuff that isn't detrimental.
Right.
And just go like, okay, you know, you probably spent too much time there. It's not for you. Pull back. But I keep that as a monument to remembering there's a separation between excitement and passion.
Dude.
And like, for me, photography is a passion because I can't not do it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. This podcast mic, I obviously can let it sit, right? Like, so for me, that was an excitement thing, you know, like, hey, this is cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I, you know, man, that's because I always struggled in the beginning, because esports and gaming is what got me in here. And to your point, though, like gaming, and it's interesting, gaming played a very important role in my childhood because the storytelling and the games I grew up in were almost like an escape to my reality. And it was a place where, you know, very similar to you. I lived in my childhood was intentionally structured, you know, and it was like I was a swimmer for 10 years. I played basketball. I did soccer. I did all these things. And, you know, my mom and I actually had a good conversation about the importance of like why they were doing that, because I'm starting to reap the rewards of having that super disciplined childhood, although it did come with some damage. It did come with some things I had to work through on my own. But gaming was that one creative spot where I could get lost in a character and lost in a story, and nothing else in the entire world mattered. Like nothing else. Cause when I was a swimmer, I was up 5:30 AM every single day for 10 years.
Yep.
You know, like it was terrible. And I just, you know, to be quite frank, I just wanted to like maybe wake up at 7 o'clock or 7:30, smoke a bowl with the homies and like go to school and like not have too many cares in the world. You know what I mean? So that was like what got me into this was like gaming, but that was just a super duper excitement and it wasn't sustainable. Like I tried Twitch streaming and it just wasn't sustainable. And that's what actually got me into podcasting in the first place. You know what I mean?
That's interesting to hear from you, because the couple examples you brought up, it seems to me like connection and story are your passions.
Yeah,
and you found your outlet for your passions in doing these things. So when you get something that feels like it will be connection to story, but doesn't have that part, it becomes more the excitement. And then you quickly go, this is not quite as...
It wasn't as exciting. You know, I bought a $4,000 computer. I got all these things. I got all... Dude.
We're not going to compare dollars spent for shit we didn't do.
Dude, like I still use it, but I have way more horsepower in this thing than most people need. And I still do. That's the one toxic trait of mine. I'll tell you, Joe, I'll be really frank. This is to the point where I don't even really care about it anymore. Is it like, I always tell myself the lie and I know it's a lie, but I just choose to believe it. That like, oh, I'm just future proofing my computer. It's like, no. I'm just a fucking nerd and I like really shiny lights and really cool, like really big horsepower. And I blame my dad for it because I'm going to fully not take responsibility and blame my dad for it. Is like my dad always buys the car and always buys the motor that has way more than he'll ever need, but he likes knowing he has it. Right.
You know, just in case you right? never know.
You just never know. You never know when you might need it. But we all know that we are never going to need it. I will probably never need it doing podcasting. But I like knowing I have it, and it's really fun for me to wake up and look at, you know, so that's one of my toxic traits of like, oh, I'm just future proofing my computer. No. Like, no, I'm not doing that. But very similar to you though, like this Twitch streaming, it like burnt me out. Like mm-hmm. I couldn't, because what I realized is that I would try to have conversations like you and me are having with like six people while I'm playing a video game. And like, that is just not possible. Like, and what's really interesting is that you'll literally never see me host a Twitter space, like actually host it. I'll be on Twitter space. I'll be, you know, I like co-hosting and I like moderating. I like doing things like that, but you'll never see me hosting it because the live audience, whether we want to admit it or not, a lot of times will alter the way we answer questions. And it will alter the way it'll alter the way we answer questions. So that's why I chose podcasting, because I'm like, I got so full of myself and so nervous and so fearful that it altered the genuine answer that I wanted to say. You know what I mean? And so that's actually why I enjoy podcasting so much, is because this is pre-recorded. There's no audience. It's just you and me like riffing, you know, or riffing. And like, that's really all there is to it. And that's really where I found like my true joy, is that like, there's no pressure. You know what I mean? It's just two people having a conversation, usually over coffee. Right. But you'll never
see connection. It's actual connection.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's, you know, you get to, I'm sorry, hold on one second. I've got kids yelling
outside the door. You're good. Take it up. That's one thing I don't have to deal with.
We've got friends over and they're outside playing, but the children have somehow migrated inside. And even though we have a whole other end of the home or an upstairs they can play, apparently by the front door in my office is like the cool hangout spot.
Dude, my mom used to say that all the time. She's like, Kyle, you have all this shit. You have all this room. But you choose to do this right here in front of me. Like while I'm on a conference call or while I'm on a, you know, my dogs growing up would do the same thing. Like all this space in the house. And mind you, they were little dogs, like a dachshund and a Chihuahua terrier. They would choose to roughhouse right next to me. Like when I'm playing video games, it's
the wildest thing.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I respect that. It's something I only have a dog right now, so I don't have to do, you know, like I don't have the struggles, but also of the shenanigans of having kids. If you don't mind me asking, how many do you have?
I got two kids, a daughter and a son. And my daughter's the oldest. Yeah.
Nice, man. Yeah. Nice, dude.
Yeah. No, it's awesome, but it's also weird. It's not for everybody. It's weird that people try to make it for everybody.
Mm.
Like the parents or whoever be like, oh, you should have kids. Why?
Yeah.
Why? If you don't have kids, don't have kids. Like, yeah. It's the same as like, I ride a bike to work. Why did you get a car? Because I like riding a bike to work. Who cares? Like, what does it matter to you? Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, another lie I tell myself is that like, oh, I live like in walking distance of the movie theater, but I will you'll never catch me walking to the movie theater. Like, because I'm in Texas.
Even when it gets a little cooler where you are?
You know, the reality, Joe, is I could blame it mostly on the heat, but I'm just really fucking lazy. Like,
Fair enough.
Like,
hey, self-awareness is a superpower, my dude.
It really is, dude. I do my exercise through yoga. I do it with walking my dog. I do it, you know, but I don't genuinely just like walking for the fun of it. You know what I mean? I usually will take my car, but man, this has been good, dude. I think this is a good time to wrap it up, Joe. I've enjoyed this, man.
Wow, this is nice. I appreciate it.
Yeah, dude. I want to thank you for coming on, but also like want to give you an opportunity to like shout out, like where can people find your work? Like where can people find you? You know, where can people get to know you better?
Yeah. So I'm on Instagram and Twitter, but Twitter is, as you know, where I spend 99.9% of my time.
Yep.
And yeah, my website, Twitter, Instagram, all of it is at the Joe Cardamone. I was fortunate to get my name's not too my name's a little odd, so it was kind of helpful.
Right.
But I will say there, if you search for me by just Joe Cardamone, there's like a metal rock star that has the same name. So like he's the only person that will come up. So it's at the Joe Cardamone, not Joe Cardamone.
Gotcha.
Because I am not the lead singer for an alt rock heavy metal band, surprisingly.
Good to know. Put a V in front of it, man.
Well,
dude, this has been fun. I also gotta like to say I loved how this whole podcast happened because we were on a space one night and you were just like, you know what? Like, I think I'd like to be on your podcast and talk about some shit. And I'm like, you know what? I love because for me, like shooting my shot with people has been like one of my most favorite things to do. And I just really respect people that do that in a live forum. Like I just love the way this whole thing happened. I just wanted to say all that.
No, it was cool. Really quick. I know we're wrapping up, but this one of the pieces of advice my father gave me years ago that I live out throughout everything in my life is make them tell you no. Right. And basically it just means tell yourself yes all the time. Be your biggest advocate. You know, a good example in the Twitter space or in the NFT space would be like, oh, I don't want to apply to Super Rare. They may not accept me. They definitely won't accept you if you don't apply, right? Tell yourself yes. Let them tell you no. Like, still apply, because if you don't, the answer is already no, right? But if you do apply and they accept you, then the answer is yes. If they don't, you're still in the same spot, but at least you made the effort. You did what you could.
That's right.
So I use that with everything in my life. It just,
and you live it. You're not just saying that just to say it. You actually live it, because this whole thing is an example of that. So love it, dude. Love it, Joe.
Yeah.
Well, we're gonna end on that. Hang out for just a little bit. We're gonna let this finish uploading, man. But it's been a treat, dude.
Yeah, thanks for having me again, man.
Of course. All right.